Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. A recent New York Times investigation about Amazon's demanding corporate culture has a lot of people talking about what they're facing at work. According to that front page report, at Amazon, workers are encouraged to tear apart one another's ideas in meetings, toil long and late, and held to standards that the company boasts are unreasonably high. The internal phone directory instructs colleagues on how to send secret feedback to one another's bosses. Employees say it is frequently used to sabotage others. According to several reports, this is not unusual, and it's not just tech. From delivery drivers to state employees, people are working longer hours, they're juggling more responsibilities, they are asked to be available at all hours of the night. If they're lucky enough to go on a vacation, they are also asked to be on the vacation. Speaking of vacation, a Gallup poll found that unused vacation time is at a 40-year high in the United States. People are not taking their vacations. A Gallup poll also found that 50% of respondents clock in more than 40 hours a week. In 2011, the Wall Street Journal called it the super job era, characterized by doing more and not griping about it. But what does this mean for our lives and for our productivity? What are you facing at work? What changes are you seeing? Do you receive emails from your boss at all hours of the night? If you're lucky enough to go on vacation, are you supposed to be on at all times? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. If you'd like to remain anonymous, that's fine. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Ross Eisenbray, Vice President of the Economic Policy Institute. Ross is a lawyer and former commissioner of the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Review Commission, and he's testified a number of times in the House and the Senate and has written a number of articles on a wide range of labor issues. And he joins us on the line from Washington. Hi, Ross. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. It's great to be on the show.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Emily Peck, Executive Business and Tech Editor of the Huffington Post. Previously, Emily was an editor at the Wall Street Journal. She spent 5 years there. She was also an editor at the American Lawyer magazine, and she joins us on the line from New York. Hi, Emily. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. So, Emily, I want to start off with you because you write about these issues on a regular basis, and you had a great line in the piece that you wrote for the Huffington Post about the New York Times piece. You wrote, "Amazon culture comes off like the pinnacle of what's prized at the highest reaches of corporate America. Workers kill themselves trying to please a corporation that, at the end of the day, doesn't care much about them." What really struck you about that New York Times piece about Amazon?
I guess what struck me about it was that at the end of the day, though what's happening at Amazon and their workplace culture sounds bruising and aggressive and, you know, frankly terrible, when you think about it, this is something that's been happening at U.S. companies for a long time. People who work at law firms or consulting companies weren't surprised to read about the conditions at Amazon. The cultures in those kinds of places aren't dissimilar. It didn't seem so special or unusual, beyond the specifics. The broader story of sort of a brutal workplace seemed too familiar. It seemed like something we're all dealing with right now.
Right. And Sidney Finkelstein, a management professor at Dartmouth Truck Center for Leadership, told you that Amazon is perfecting the American business model, working day and night. No meaningfulness. They're just better at it than most others. They're the top of the game in terms of the future of work in America. They're a good example of what it looks like, and that's not a wonderful thing. Ross, what are your thoughts on this? You say that Amazon is really taking things to the extreme.
I don't think that all workplaces are as terrible as Amazon, and the hours that they describe where one employee said it felt like the CEO was in bed with him because he could get a call at 3 a.m. and have to respond to it within minutes or get a phone call, saying, "Where are you?" I think that is still unusual. The vast majority of people are working in factories and retail and various service jobs that are not at the Amazon level. But it's true that people are working longer hours, or at least they report that they're working very long hours. I have a survey in front of me that says that salaried workers, if you're people who are paid a salary, 71% say that they work at least 41 to 49 hours, and half say that they work 50 or more hours a week.
Well, so, and we'll talk about retail workers. We'll talk also about warehouse workers at Amazon. But let's stick with this for a minute, because what are your thoughts on why this is happening? I mean, we know this has been happening on Wall Street for decades. In fact, the New York Times had this kind of surreal and really sad piece about how these interns working on Wall Street are getting really sick because they're working so much. In one case, one young man died, and his father said he thinks it's because he was overworked. Goldman Sachs had to recently tell their interns not to work between midnight and 7 a.m. and not to work on a Saturday. But we just got an email from a California state employee who's a manager who said this is what we're facing also. We're getting emails from our bosses at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night, and people work nonstop. When we go on vacation, we have to be on. So this is not just tech, and it's not just finance.
Well, if you're a salaried employee, you're supposed to be covered by overtime pay requirements, which mean that you have to be paid time and a half for each hour you work beyond 40. Until you get to a certain level of responsibility where you're a high enough manager, an administrator, some sort of a professional like a lawyer, where the compensation is supposed to be great enough to compensate you for your long hours, and then you're not entitled to overtime pay anymore. So what has happened, unfortunately, is that with the consent of the government, these rules have been weakened and weakened and weakened, and they've driven down the notion of who is an exempt executive, who is, you know, the someone important enough and compensated enough that they shouldn't get overtime, that now people paid as little as $25,000 or $30,000 a year are considered exempt from overtime. They're treated as if they're, you know, a bigger deal than they are, and they're not, but they're not compensated. You know, they only get $30,000 whether they work 60 hours a week or 40 or 80. And that's wrong, and the Department of Labor, I'm happy to say, is addressing that. They have a new overtime rule that will say if you make less than $50,000 a year approximately, you are guaranteed overtime pay. And that'll be a big help for the people, you know, that make $40,000-$45,000 a year and are told, oh, you're a manager, you have to work 80 hours a week, and we don't have to pay you a penny more for 60 hours than we pay you for 40. It will put an end to that, at least. People above $50,000 will still be subjected to these kinds of pressures.
And so who does this apply to exactly? People who make less than 50,000, but what kind of jobs are we talking about? I mean, what would a Walmart cashier get overtime?
Well, they're hourly workers, and they have to be paid overtime now. So they're not. They're already. If they work 55 hours a week, they should get 15 hours that they're paid time and a half for. And I think that they by and large do. Although Walmart has been caught, you know, cheating on all kinds of different wage and hour issues, but I think generally they probably do pay overtime to their cashiers when they're working 50 hours a week. This is for the assistant manager or, you know, customer representatives and various people who have jobs that seem white-collar. And if they're paid a salary, many of them haven't been paid for their overtime work. And this rule says if you make less than $50,000, it doesn't matter what your job is, you have to be paid time and a half.
So, Ross, what do you think, though, about what came out in this Amazon piece? I mean, talk a little bit about the tone that these companies set. I mean, I remember when I got my first job out of college as a tech reporter covering privacy issues when the internet was brand new. Most people had never heard of it. The sign on my boss's door said, "Lunch is for sissies." And I thought, I'm not sure how I feel about that. I mean, and most of the men never took lunch. I mean, they stayed long after 6 o'clock, and the very few women that worked there said, well, we have lives, we're leaving. So what kind of tone does that set for the rest of, you know, people who might not work in tech?
Well, people think of Amazon as being a leader and being, you know, the workplace of the future or something. So it doesn't set a very good model. And as you say, it's especially hard for women who take on most of the caregiving responsibilities.
Right.
So they feel like if I have to be home with my kids, it's you know, who's going to be with them after school? I've got to do it. I'm going to be hurt. You know, my evaluation isn't going to be as good. And in fact, that seems to be what the emails show, that they get trashed by their fellow employees for doing what everybody in America would say they ought to do, which is take care of their family.
Emily, what are your thoughts on this? What kind of tone do you think this sets for the rest of working America?
I think it's interesting that you said people think of Amazon as the workplace of the future, because it seems actually, in many ways, Amazon is the workplace of the past. I think as more and more women are now in the workforce, more and more companies are taking a much more enlightened view on workplace flexibility, and acknowledging that their employees have lives and it's important for them to be able to take care of their lives. You see a lot of more companies now offering longer maternity leave or more flexible hours. Some of Amazon's competitors are doing that. And then when you read the New York Times piece, you read that Amazon didn't offer any paternity leave to fathers at all, and that in follow-up stories you saw that mothers there who took time away from maternity leave were penalized upon their return. So I think their culture seems very damaging to any worker who wants to have a life outside of work, particularly women, because, yeah, a lot of the times, you know, they're the ones doing the caregiving or having the babies. And I think that is a sort of a backwards way of running a business in 2015.
Right. And as you said, there is a stigma even around taking advantage of those benefits that are basic in many other countries but not in the United States, such as paternity leave.
Yeah, and I think not even giving fathers paternity leave says a lot about the way Amazon thinks of caregiving as something maybe only women do, and that sort of sets a tone for the whole culture inside a company, right? It sort of sets you up to discriminate against women. If they're the only ones who are getting any time for caregiving and men aren't getting any, then, you know, you're sending a very clear message about who's supposed to be doing the work.
Right, but there's also probably stigma around taking advantage of benefits such as maternity leave.
Yes, we saw there was a post, I think on Medium.com last week or early this week, in which a former Amazon worker describes going on maternity leave and then when she came back just getting totally derailed. She had pulled off a major project and sort of sidelined, and she wound up quitting. And that's something you do hear about happening in a lot of places, unfortunately, but not in an enlightened workplace of the future, one would hope.
Emily Peck is executive business and tech editor of The Huffington Post. She has a piece in response to the New York Times front page scathing piece about Amazon's corporate culture called Amazon Only Perfected What American Work Culture Created. We created the 24/7 work culture. Amazon just took it to the extreme. We're also joined by Ross Eisenbray, vice president of the Economic Policy Institute. And we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on the changing work environment, the changing work culture in the United States? What is it like at your work? Are you working longer hours? Are you constantly available? What are your employer's expectations? What pressures do you work under? Give us a call, 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. Is the norm now to work longer hours? How are you and your colleagues responding to this? And you can also be anonymous. You can email us, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Ross, Mother Jones had a really interesting piece a couple years ago called Overworked America, 12 Charts That Will Make Your Blood Boil. And the lead says, in the past 20 years, the U.S. economy has grown 60%. This huge increase in productivity is partly due to automation, the internet, and other efficiency improvements. But it's also the result of Americans working harder, often without a big boost to their bottom lines. And meanwhile, corporate profits are up 20%. So who's really benefiting from all of these overworked citizens?
Well, we have a paper up on our homepage at epi.org today, which is about the pay and productivity gap, that workers are not just working harder, but working more efficiently. They're producing more per hour of work, and it used to be that when that happened, workers ended up with bigger paychecks. And starting in about 1973, the corporate culture changed and CEOs decided that they weren't going to share as much of that productivity gain with their workers. They were going to keep more for themselves and more for the shareholders. And that has happened and continued for the last almost 40 years, or it has been 40 years, and it's phenomenal. The economy has grown actually 73% over that time, and but the workers have gotten a tiny share. The bottom 90% of workers have gotten a tiny share of the growth in wealth and income in the nation. CEO pay has increased almost 1,000%, if you can believe, the top CEOs. So, you know, who is benefiting from it? It's clear. It's the people who are running corporate America have changed the rules completely and said, we're going to keep working people hard, we're going to make them work harder and harder, and we're not going to share the gains with them. We're going to keep it all for ourselves.
What would you add to that, Emily? A recent report just came out looking at tech CEOs and found that the top top CEOs make 331 times the average worker. And I haven't seen it broken down like this among tech CEOs, but it was interesting to look at. Yahoo CEO Marissa Mayer makes $40 million a year, for example. So what about that part of this?
I agree. I mean, it's shocking how much CEO pay has skyrocketed in comparison to the average worker's pay. And at the same time, we're working more than ever before. I think it seems like a sad reality right now, and I don't see it changing very much. I recently wrote a piece also about how companies are paying workers now, which is there's an increasing tendency to give people annual bonuses instead of annual raises. So from year to year, you don't really know what your salary is going to be. You used to get maybe a 4 or 5% raise. Average raises have been pretty flat, and then every year, you know, the company decides if it's doing well, it may give you a little bonus, which sort of adds to the picture of wage insecurity for most American workers.
Today we are talking about what work is like in the average American workplace. Are you working more? What is your employer demanding of you? How is the culture really changing? We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email us if you want to be anonymous, feedback@yourcallradio.org. We've got a couple of emails. Billy writes in, I drive a truck. Sometimes I haul hazardous material, more than 1,500 pounds of a given substance. The company pays by the mile and by the quarter hour when I make a delivery. That means no overtime and no hourly compensation when I'm stuck in traffic. The pay pans out all right, but with the fight for 15, it's interesting that just 2 years ago, I was not making much more than I was paid by the hour, and with the new piecework structure, it's only a small amount more. I feel for those who do medical work and policing after working long shifts. Also, farm workers get almost nothing, as you know. Back to work, he writes. I'm glad you wrote in, Billy, because I'm noticing, Emily, there's so many of these new delivery services. So basically, you can get anything delivered with your app, whether it's food, laundry, you name it. And, you know, I talked to one of the drivers working for one of these food delivery systems, and he's making about $12 an hour in San Francisco and says he has to pay for his own gas. He can barely make ends meet.
Yeah, it's really amazing. There's this whole new, it seems like a whole new class of workers coming up now who are basically contractors for these very big startups that are very successful. Uber, for example, is a multi-billion dollar startup, but Uber drivers aren't employees. You know, they're contractors. They don't get any kind of, they don't get benefits. They don't get the security of actually being part of this big successful company, and there's more and more workers like this now. And it's sort of important to remember that as you read the Time story about Amazon workers, these are still people with very, very good jobs, actually. Mm-hmm. They are being worked really hard, and the atmosphere seems brutal, but compared to the experiences of a lot of other workers, it doesn't even seem so bad.
Well, right, because people pointed that out when so many responses came into this Amazon piece, Ross. A lot of people said, wait a minute, let's not forget what these warehouse workers had to deal with a couple of years ago, where it was so hot in these Amazon warehouses in Pennsylvania people were passing out, and so they had to bring in medical staff to deal with this issue. And this did get a lot of attention a couple of years ago, Ross, but a lot of people said, let's not forget about that also.
Yeah, well, Amazon knew that the conditions were unbearable. They had ambulances standing by, waiting for the workers to collapse, rather than paying the little bit extra, you know, to air condition the warehouse. That was a conscious choice that they made, to let the workers suffer and perhaps have a heart attack and die, heat stroke, heat exhaustion. They were willing to take that chance, which is really kind of appalling. But they disrespect their workers in so many ways. You know, the way that story talked about the white-collar workers at their warehouses, where they've contracted out the work to a different company. The employees were forced to stand in long lines and wait to be checked out and frisked to be sure that they weren't stealing from the warehouse. But the whole time that they were waiting in line, they weren't being paid for it. And the Supreme Court said that was okay, that they weren't working at that point, even though the company controlled their time. They couldn't leave. They would have been fired if they tried to leave, yet they weren't paid for it. I find that just a perfect example of how they have no respect for their workers or their time or the rest of their lives.
Seven workers filed a lawsuit in South Carolina against Amazon last year saying that they barely have time to eat lunch. Again, these are warehouse workers. Emily, do you know, have there been any major changes for warehouse workers at Amazon?
I don't think so. I think they won that court case and about the frisking, and I don't think there have been much in the way of improvements for the Amazon warehouse workers. I think the press around the story sort of ebbs sometimes, but as far as I understand, nothing much has changed for those guys.
We have another email from someone who writes in, my wife just started her residency at Sutter Health, over 80-hour weeks, no overtime since she's on a stipend. She's treating patients and taking care of people's lives, yet horrendously underpaid. Let's focus on the important stuff, not some inflated tech company. Good point there, Ross.
Yeah, well, as I was trying to say, 90% of the workforce is working harder. The statistics show that on average their productivity has gone up 73% over the last 40 years, and as Emily points out, their pay has gone up 0.2% per year on average. So they're working harder, they're working more efficiently, people are better educated. The workforce has are more likely to have a high school education, more likely to have an associate's degree or a four-year college degree, and yet we see the average compensation stagnant as the economy continues to grow. It's terrible.
Right. Well, it just reminds me of the few times I've had to spend in the hospital with loved ones. You hear these stories. I don't know if we're talking about a nurse or a doctor here, but you hear these stories of being so overworked and underpaid. Today we are talking about life in the workforce. What is it like for you? Do you have longer hours? Is this just expected? Are you able to take vacation? We'll talk about that after the break. Unused vacation now is at a 40-year high in the United States. So what is it like in your workforce? How are you and your colleagues responding? Just after the break, we will take our next call talking about unions and the decline of unions and how that is affecting all of this. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
There are lots of ways to join in today's conversation on Your Call. You can send an email. The address would be feedback@yourcallradio.org, feedback@yourcallradio.org, or our toll-free number, if you'd like to talk to our guests or Rose, is 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. And again, it's toll-free. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. Following that at noon today, Bina from our friends at the San Francisco Jewish Community Center.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. President Obama is making headlines this week for becoming the first sitting president to visit the Arctic. He's drawing attention to the impacts of climate change. At the same time, last month, he gave the green light to Shell to drill for oil and gas in the Arctic. So we'll talk about both of those stories, how the media are reporting on those. We'll also talk about coverage of California's climate bill and the Saudi King's three-day visit to Washington. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation about our changing workplace culture, give us a call. We'd love to hear your story. What is it like where you work? What are expectations? Do you have to be on constantly? Do you take vacation? How are things changing? How are you and your colleagues responding to this? 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And you can be anonymous. And if you work in a healthy environment, in a place that values work-life balance and feels more like a cooperative environment, we'd also love to hear from you. Today, we're joined by Ross Eisenbray, Vice President of the Economic Policy Institute. Emily Peck is Business and Tech Editor of the Huffington Post. And we're talking about this because a recent New York Times investigation about Amazon's demanding corporate culture has a lot of people discussing their realities at work. I want to read another email from a listener who works for a public library in San Francisco, who says, in the last year, the library system, it seems like we don't have enough staff while the library has expanded hours. I'm happy to live in a city that has a strong system. I like being part of a neighborhood. Due to understaffing, workers are being transferred for part or all of their shift to other libraries. This disrupts our ability to do the work we need to do in our home branch. Library employees want to help out the system to be successful, but it does make the workday unpredictable, and predictability in the workday is an important quality for a worker. I know when I get called on to change my workday constantly, I feel resentment at being treated like the work at my own branch doesn't work and made to feel that I'm not important. On a different note, I'm lucky because I have a pension. Ross, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it is really disruptive to have your workday changed or your location, your commute changed, especially if you're a parent and you have to arrange daycare, for example, for your children, or you have a plan to pick them up at a certain time after school and then your hours are suddenly changed, whether you're a librarian or a retail worker. That can be catastrophic. I mean, it's not just annoying; it can be catastrophic. Mm. So you know, some sort of regular schedule is a big deal for working people, and we see that employers are using these just-in-time scheduling systems to let people know, like hours in advance, when they're going to work.
Right.
Changing them, having people report, and then sending them home after they've made their commute and they've made their child care arrangement, sending them home because they've determined that, you know, the customers aren't going to be coming in that afternoon. Those things are really disruptive, and happily there are laws that have been passed and laws that are being proposed to keep that from happening, to protect the workers from these sudden changes in schedule.
And in the media this week was a story about Walmart. They're raising hourly wages to $9. They did that in April. But in order to deal with their soaring labor costs, the company says that they're going to cut employees' hours.
I think that you should not trust Walmart and their press releases. At the same time, they've had a decline in their customers. Their sales have fallen off. They haven't met expectations. So I think that's why they might be cutting staffing more than, quote, soaring labor costs.
Right. They told Bloomberg that their labor costs have soared by $1 billion after raising wages to $9 in April.
You know, $1 billion for Walmart is like a drop in the bucket. $1 billion over what period? You know, and
right.
When you look at the Walton family wealth, you have to wonder whether they would notice $1 billion here or there.
Now, in addition to having this sporadic schedule, this anonymous listener working for the library says, while I do have a pension, I'm really stressed out because the politics of austerity is gaining more credibility and more attention in this country. And to think that my pension could be taken or endangered is pretty stressful.
Yeah, well, public employees are under a lot of attack everywhere. Your listener is in California, and California has done a better job, I think, of protecting public pensions than some other states have. I know it's been a big deal politically. There have been attempts to change the state constitution, but so far, I think public employees have had their pensions pretty well protected. California also has innovative laws for, like, nurse staffing, requiring certain staffing ratios to make sure that nurses aren't overstressed and that patient care doesn't suffer. There are actually legislative responses to a lot of these problems, and California is one of the states that's leading the way.
Well, we have a nurse on the line who would like to be anonymous. Hi, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, Rose.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the air. Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm a nurse, and I work for Sutter Health as well, but through the home health agencies. We are non-unionized, and unfortunately, we get basically no compensation for raises. We get a measly 2%, which basically ends up being nothing. All they care about our managers is productivity, how many patients you see. They've also started a call system where we have to take call in the evening, which means we could technically be working all day, take call at night, and working the following day. Many nurses have left because they have small children at home, and they just can't leave to see patients in the middle of the night. We're totally disrespected by our management. It's really a shame.
So you have to be on call at night, meaning you might have to go to the hospital at 1 in the morning?
No. Go to see patients in their home.
Oh, in their home. Okay.
We're home health nurses. We see patients in their home. So we could be driving to San Francisco or to Santa Clara and, you know, live in the middle somewhere and leave our small children at home because we have to do it. There's no choice. Or else you leave. They say basically hit the road if you don't want to do it.
How long have you been a nurse?
I've been a nurse 37 years.
Wow. And so what?
I have never seen it this bad. Well, it's gotten really, really bad. I mean, there's no respect for nursing anymore.
Why? Why do you think it's gotten so bad?
I don't know. I think it's big corporations. Sutter Health is growing like crazy. All of their money is going to moving to new buildings, building new buildings, and not compensating the workers. Not just nursing, but, physical therapy, occupational therapy, office staff. I mean, if you start to complain, you get retaliated against. You get attacked. They start telling you, why are you doing this? How many miles are you driving? You know, they're checking everything. It's totally outrageous.
How long have you been with Sutter Health? Have you ever been a unionized nurse?
I have been unionized, and things were much better. Mm. I mean, we had some support. There's no way to get any support now at all.
And have there been efforts to unionize at Sutter?
Not through home health. The hospitals at Sutter Health are unionized, but the home health agencies are not. And I really don't know why.
So what are you planning to do about this?
Well, I do not know, quite frankly. I mean, I love my job. I love what I do. Mm-hmm. But, if things get bad enough, I may have to switch either to another agency or, I definitely refuse to go back into the hospital because it's just dangerous in the hospital.
What do you mean?
With ratio of nurses to patients.
Wow. Just long, long hours and you're tired and you're treating people.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. Ross, it's so sad to hear this. 37 years she's dedicated her life to being a nurse and serving people. And because of this work environment, she might walk away from it.
Well, as she said, she was unionized once. Maybe that's the solution now. That if she, it's a risky thing to try to organize a union because companies, as she said, do retaliate against you. But if the choice is walking away from a job and patients that you love, or trying to stand up to the corporation, it's an individual choice that no one can make for someone else.
Mm. And Emily, speaking of unions, a lot of low-wage workers who work in technology are trying to unionize. Mother Jones has a piece from a couple weeks ago. Google's low-wage contract workers are poised to unionize. These are people who drive the Google Shopping Express vans.
That's pretty interesting. It is shocking when you dig into the workforces at these big tech companies. You hear so much about how well they treat their workers, especially a place like Google. And then when you dig down and you look at the conditions that contractors face, you see a totally different picture. So good for them for trying to unionize and get a bit bigger piece of the pie.
And what did you make of Facebook's recent announcement? They said that they would require all contractors to pay any worker that works for Facebook $15 an hour. And a lot of people said that was directly in response to a lot of these workers trying to unionize. So basically telling workers, no, don't do that. We'll pay you $15. Just don't unionize. What were your thoughts on that?
I think it's good that Facebook is paying those workers more, asking contractors to pay those workers more. I think they're also now requiring contractors to have paid vacation and paid sick time. I think long-term unionization is better, and there should be policy solutions to a lot of these problems, as Ross pointed out earlier.
And Ross, what are your thoughts on this efforts to try to unionize by these low-wage workers who are working in tech?
I think that they should if they can, absolutely. When you said that they get $15 an hour, Facebook is telling its contractors that they have to pay $15 an hour and they have to provide, Emily says, vacation pay and sick leave benefits. Think of the federal government, where it was a big deal when the president just said by executive order that all federal contractors had to pay their employees at least $10.10 an hour. I mean, Facebook is demanding more of its contractors than the federal government does. And the federal government has, hundreds of thousands of contract employees.
Well, on unions, Rob writes in, we need stronger unions and better laws to encourage unionization. There is a strong correlation between the decline in unions and the decline in wages and other benefits. We have another email. I'm a union worker in healthcare, and I get raises every year, increased pensions, and the ability to take vacation or save it. Maybe corporation workers need to consider unionization. Thank you for those emails. And you can email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can also give us a call at 866-798-8255. Today we are talking about the changing workplace, corporate culture in the United States. What is it like for you in terms of pay, hours, vacation? Do you feel like you have a voice at work? 866-798-8255. Ross Eisenbray is Vice President of the Economic Policy Institute, and Emily Peck is Executive Business and Tech Editor at the Huffington Post. And let's go next to David in San Francisco. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much. And I'm a member of KALW, and I enjoy hearing Ms. Aguilar and Mr. Martin, and I have a suggestion for a show. I enjoyed listening to the truck driver, and he was telling about his situation, how he gets paid, and then he said, well, now back to work. So how many hours are we working? And for a show, let's talk about how we can get our wages or our salaries raised. What are the different modes and methods where we can start some practice or some campaign to get everybody's wages raised? This is ridiculous. All this piddling around with hourlies, ought to be $27.99 an hour.
Well, thank you. Ross, what are your first off, what are your thoughts on the Fight for 15 campaign?
I'm amazed at how successful the Fight for 15 campaign has been. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, I thought, that this was really a quixotic thing, that no one would really take it seriously. And yet they have victory after victory, and they've made certainly the media pay attention, and politicians are now paying attention, and even Facebook. I mean, that's where this is coming from, that Facebook is saying pay your people $15 an hour, right? Contractors. Having thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in the streets demanding this and hopefully demanding that their politicians support minimum wage increases and living wage legislation. I think that's how change happens, by people getting angry and getting involved.
Well, thank you for calling in, David. I want to go to another anonymous listener who writes, my experience in the Silicon Valley workplace as a working mom of two kids is that I have had to work myself to the point of frequent illness to keep up with expectations. It's truly survival of the fittest. I've worked up to a director position and insisted on having the flexibility to pick up my kids after school, but I've suffered a lot to prove myself so that I could get to this place. I've had to give up seeing friends or spending much time with relatives, and I've accepted less pay than a man would make for similar work. I've been on medication, even on disability, because of the demanding standards past bosses have required. And now I see the children of my generation going through the crisis of seeing what it takes to get ahead. They're either crumbling or rebelling. I hope my daughters will have an easier future in the workplace. Emily, what about this? I just went to the doctor yesterday. My doctor said she is seeing so many young people who are so overworked, so overstressed, and getting sick as a result. She said she's never seen this before so bad.
I think it's just so sad, and such a big problem. And I think for women just hitting the workplace, I think some of them are just get a nasty shock and surprise. When I talk to younger women where I work, I feel like they've been told they're going to be able to have everything they ever wanted, and women now succeed in the workplace, and it's so great. And then they look around and they see, you know, working mothers above them just like really killing themselves. And making huge sacrifices to stay in their jobs and to get ahead, I think it's a big problem, and it makes me sad to hear stories like the one you just described, because I think it's all too common.
It is all too common, and what can people do about it? Someone else wrote in, having been retired for several years, I can see the corporate world with more clarity, and I see what a fool I was to go along with the, quote, way things were. It's very important, this listener writes, for the good of all of us, that we stand up to corporations that behave badly. We need to recognize that we ourselves have the power to change this. Please do not kowtow to companies that do what you know is wrong. What about that, Ross? What would you say to this woman who's getting sick because of, you know, just trying to keep up?
Well, we have, as part of preparation for the overtime rule and submitting comments to the Department of Labor, we collected a lot of stories like that of people who literally worked themselves until they were, too damaged to keep working. Sometimes it was physical, sometimes it was mental, but you want to say, well, take another job, but in the job market that we've had, it was very hard for people to switch jobs. You know, they knew that they would have trouble finding another job, and people are afraid that they won't have a good reference. I mean, it's not easy,
right,
in today's workplace. So, the long-term answer is we need to have unions again, the way we used to, instead of 1 in 10 workers, the way it is now. You know, we need to have 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 workers organized, and so that they have enough bargaining power to lift wages for themselves and for others. But the government should be doing more. You know, the government shouldn't let people be worked to death. It shouldn't let people work 60 and 70 hours a week for $40,000 a year. And the Labor Department, as I say in this rule, is taking a step. It's probably not enough. I have always believed that there ought to be something like a maximum mandatory work week, so that no one could be forced to work, let's say more than 60 hours in a week. You'd be paid time and a half until 60 hours, but no one should be forced by their employer to work hours that are literally going to kill them eventually. You know, the recent studies show that the risk of stroke is a third higher for people who work 55 hours a week or more.
Wow. NPR had a piece about that, interviewing a young woman who had a stroke, and she believes it's because she worked so hard.
Yeah, the stress and the long hours actually are killers.
Well, thank you so much for calling in or writing in with your story. You can write us also at feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can also call 866-798-8255. Ross Eisenbray is VP of the Economic Policy Institute. Emily Peck is business and tech editor at the Huffington Post. We have another anonymous listener email. I worked in the hospitality industry in what I reference a 48/7 job as part of a tech team. My role required me to be on call, overseeing a large support staff with no break from being on call 7 days a week. We were also micromanaged and the workplace was toxic. I realized after leaving that workplace, I was not the only one with a significant change in health. My blood pressure was 20 points above normal. That's huge, which was a shock. Other colleagues had similar issues, blood sugar levels, unhealthy eating, poor family time. That experience made me realize no job is worth compromising my health, time, and happiness. Since then, I've found great information and a movement for flexible work. And this listener sent over a couple different helpful websites. We'll put a few on ours. 1 million for workplace flexibility. And then this listener writes, it's ridiculous that Amazon offers great speedy delivery service via Amazon Prime, creating a demand for quick delivery. Well, thank you for that. What are your thoughts, Emily? Is there a movement within this industry to say no? We're not going to accept this.
I think there are more and more leaders in the business community that are talking about this, and there are managers and CEOs that are trying to set a better example or show a different path. Managers who talk about going to see their kids at their soccer games or their recitals, and bosses, my boss Arianna Huffington, who talk about the importance of sleep and avoiding burnout. There's a lot of research coming out of business schools now that shows that working longer hours, especially for knowledge workers, doesn't at the end of the day create a better work. You don't need to work in often cases. You don't need to really put in long hours to be a good worker. In fact, it can often be counterproductive. I think there's a lot more talk about this and a lot more thought about this, how workaholics aren't necessarily better or more productive workers than anyone else. Working less hours can lead to more creative thinking and fewer problems. I think in the medical profession, there's increasingly doctors are more aware of this now. I think there are things happening, good things, pointing us away from sort of the 80-hour work week. I agree with Ross, though, that we need policy to bolster that. You know, we can't just rely on the business community to reform itself. I just don't think that'll ever actually happen.
Yeah, what about that, Ross? What other policies would you like to see? And how do you make some of those realistic in this political climate?
Well, there are some things that we thought weren't possible just a little while ago, and they are beginning to happen. Like I mentioned the requirements that people be paid if they report to work, that they be paid some minimum amount, like 4 hours, even if they're sent home and don't work. There are legislative solutions. Paid sick days are sort of a minimum standard that people are asking for. I think we should have paid vacations. In Europe, people have, by law, 5 weeks of vacation in most of the countries. And in the United States, we have zero.
And Ross, on that point, just quickly, this was getting a lot of attention the last month. Unused vacation time is at a 40-year high in the United States. And I hear from people who say they don't take vacation because they're afraid someone else might take over their job. How do you explain this?
Well, that is a problem. If you have a manager who says, oh, sure, you have the right to take vacation, but if you do, you won't get a promotion, then you really don't have the right. When that happens, when you have, I think the step is you have the nation as a whole through its legislature say people ought to be taking vacation. Everyone ought to have a minimum of paid vacation, and you can earn a minimum of 2 weeks a year. Okay, so then your business, even though the law requires it, says we'll punish you if you take it. That's the sort of thing that leads people to unionize or to leave that company and go to another. and say, you know, that kind of abuse I'm not going to take. And hopefully, you know, by having a standard, by having a cultural norm established, companies would eventually conform.
In addition to policy, do you think that there's the opportunity to change the culture that we hear about in this country, this sort of work culture?
Well, you know, I think part of the way you change the culture is through norms like this. Before the Fair Labor Standards Act said that the standard work week is 40 hours a week and gave companies a disincentive, essentially a penalty for working people longer, we didn't have a weekend.
Right.
It was not an established norm that people expected to have a weekend.
Right.
And but the law passed, companies conformed their behavior, and I grew up, you know, just expecting that everybody had a 5-day work week. We're starting to lose that now. And so the law needs to respond, and you know, maybe the answer is not time and a half but double overtime. Maybe the answer is better enforcement of the law that we have. One part of it is what the Department of Labor is doing by raising the salary threshold and reminding people, making it easy for people to understand. If you make less than this, then your work week is 40 hours a week, and if you work longer, you get time and a half for your overtime hours. The government has a lot to do with it.
Well, we had a lot of interest in this show, and we will definitely do another one. I just want to thank everyone who called in and shared your stories. This is such an important topic, and we'll continue to follow it. Ross Eisenbray is Vice President of the Economic Policy Institute, and Emily Peck is Executive Business and Tech Editor at the Huffington Post. Ross and Emily, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ross.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us. Thank you for your emails and phone calls. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, President Obama became the first sitting U.S. president to visit the Arctic to draw attention to climate change. Last month, the president gave the green light to Shell to drill for oil and gas in the Arctic. How are the media reporting on the president's environmental policies? We'll also discuss coverage of California's climate bill and the Saudi king's 3-day visit to Washington. Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.